Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Now, in 2008, 21-year-old Lady Unchained got involved in a fight in a club whilst trying to protect her sister. She's here to tell her about what happened from her book, Behind Bars, on Punishment, Prison and Release. Welcome to the show, Lady Unchained.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. So tell us what happened then.
You know, so like you mentioned, I was protecting my sister when she was attacked by three women in a nightclub. And of course, I didn't really think that I had done anything wrong, because, you know, when a loved one or someone you care about is attacked, like, you it's a fight or flight moment. And in that moment, I chose to fight. And that's how I ended up in prison.
Yeah, you hear so many stories like this. It's so wrong. Did the three women that started it, did they get away with it?
No, they basically all got away with it. But it's so weird as well, because I would have been the youngest one out of all of them. So they were like at least 5-6 years older than me. And I would have been the youngest. So they actually got away with everything. And I do actually recall when I was on bail, being told by the police, like, that if I want to, after my case is heard, I could then press charges. But of course, I ended up in prison. So there's no way I could.
Yeah, you're a bit busy
for that. I was a bit out of here. Aww. Out of this space.
So you served 11 months. Was that your total sentence, or was it bigger, longer, but you just served 11 months?
Yeah, so I was given 2.5 years in prison. I would serve half of that. So that would be 11 months if I was entitled to HDC, which is home detention curfew, which I managed to get. Luckily enough, I behaved myself and I got it. So I was out in 11 months, and then I served 5 months on tag until like May 2010.
Yeah. I always think it must be difficult to behave yourself, because it doesn't matter if you try and keep yourself to yourself. If somebody wants to cause trouble, then they can exactly what happened in the first place, get you to get into trouble for just looking after yourself.
Exactly. And it's a very hard place to be in, to stay good, to stay positive and not fight people. And I think that's how really I avoided it, by writing out all these emotions. And, you know, a girl wanting to fight me because of my earrings, or an officer speaking to me in a negative way. I had to start finding a way to get these emotions out without actually acting on that anger and acting on that pain, because I knew if I do anything else in here, you know, I'm going to get in more trouble. And all I wanted to do was go home.
Yeah.
So I knew that by fighting anybody, or, you know, constantly being a troublesome person within the prison system, it would cause me more harm than good. And it wasn't an easy journey. It wasn't like I got in and I was like, I'm going to be perfect and I'm going to be good. It was a very stressful kind of journey that got me to this point where I can now say I'm a writer.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. So what would you say the worst thing was about it? Was it the isolation, the loneliness, the other? Were you in a women's prison?
Yes, I was in a women's prison. And honestly, what I would say is that the loneliness is a lot. All of that is a lot. But I think for me, it was the identity. I really lost who I was even before prison. While I was on bail, I started to lose who I was. And then when I got to prison, I realized that, you know, maybe I'm not like everything I've been taught in school, and everything I've been educated to believe and understand is right, is not right. So I remember actually, you know, getting to the point where I realized that even though I had a British passport, I could be deported. And that freaked me out, because I didn't understand how I could be deported. The UK was all I knew, you know. So that for me was the hardest part, trying to rediscover who I am, and also just kind of reminding myself that I am African, and I'm always going to be seen as African before I'm seen as British. Whether or not I have a passport, it doesn't matter. And all those things, I only witnessed them in prison. Before prison, I wouldn't have ever said. I would have just been like, yeah, I'm African, but I'm British. You know, like, and going there is when I kind of really started to see a lot of like the pain and the racism and the, you know, the amount of Black people and Asian people that are within the prison system. But also the fact that when you're starting to deal with these emotions and starting to understand them, there is no outlet. There's no one, you know, there's no one you can talk to. There's no way for you to have a sit down and go, okay, like, let me call my mom and just say, can we quickly have a conversation about this? You know, you can't do that in prison. So it is really up to you to kind of discover who you are, but then also rediscover who you're going to become.
Yeah, get like an inner strength, I suppose.
Exactly.
And is there nobody that you can talk to? Would they not let you see a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a counsellor or somebody?
There was definitely psychologists and counsellors there. I will be very honest with you. I did try to see somebody when I first got into Holloway, just because I felt so low and I felt very suicidal, which is something that a lot of people don't get to talk about, because, you know, there's so many suicide deaths within the prison walls, and a lot of people don't get to ever tell their story. But suicide is a big fault when you're there. So I did have to see a therapist, just because I was obviously displaying a lot of suicidal thoughts and emotions. And if I'm honest with you, it was the worst session ever.
Really?
Like, it really made me think that I don't even ever want to see a therapist, which is crazy, because I go to therapy now like at least twice, like, you know, just like try to make sure I get that therapy in. But in that place, I was asked to see somebody. I spoke to the lady. It was about 3 weeks of constant her kind of telling me to open up, telling me to allow her into my space and, you know, talk to her. And I didn't feel comfortable until about the third week. And on the third week, the lady, after I kind of like vomited out all my story, she kind of just turned around and said, thank you so much for sharing. You know, you've been through a lot. However, I do have to tell you that I am leaving. So I'm going to do a handover. And I remember thinking, you know, I was so angry with her, because I thought, I have now allowed you to know what's going on and to know how I feel, and you're saying you're going to hand this over to the next person. And so I just decided never to go to therapy again, to be honest.
What a shame. I'm glad you carried on when you came out, because obviously that was a terrible situation, but it's not always like that.
It's not always like that. No, it's not always like that. And I did manage to get like one therapist that I was seeing on the outside to have come into one of the prisons just to see me on a one-off occasion. But even her as a therapist, she said to me, I honestly don't know how you're surviving in here, because the amount of gates that closed behind her, you know, she felt like she was an inmate, you know. So it's that kind of, there's a lot of trauma that goes into it. Even if someone just wants to care for you, it's very hard to have that.
And was it like that? I always imagine that would be the worst sound, your very first day hearing the door or the gates go and be locked. I mean, I think I'd get claustrophobia.
Do you know what? It's crazy, because like I've met a lot of women, and a lot of women now that I talk to, and you know, they said, oh yeah, I just got into more trouble. Like, you know, I just wondered like how far could they be? What else can they do to me? And I remember when I was threatened to be sent to the block, because I had refused to go to the foreign national prison. And they said that if I refuse, I would be sent to the block. Now the block is just an even smaller cell, with no TV, nothing at all. And it's a very dark place. And I remember saying, nope, I will just go to the foreign national jail, because what I had already, the little cell that I had, you know, I left a one bedroom flat when I went to jail. So that space, I just felt like I couldn't breathe. Like, so to go to the block, for me, that was not an option. That was never going to be an option. So I sacrificed myself to go to this foreign national jail, even though I knew that I shouldn't have been there. I went there just because of the fear of being in an even smaller confined space.
Yeah. Do you think it's supposed to be a place, we hear that it's a place of rehabilitation. Do you think it is, or do you think they just close the doors and that's it? They're finished with you?
I honestly don't believe that rehabilitation happens in prison. And if it does happen, it's based off of the women that you meet, the women that give you advice. Sorry, there is actually a helicopter flying across me right now.
Don't worry, we got here.
you know, it's the women that you meet that kind of tell you what they've learned, what kind of courses you can do, and kind of encourage you to keep going, to keep doing what you need to do. Like, I don't see how rehabilitation actually happens in jail. Of course, there are charities, amazing charities that go into the prisons, myself included. I go into the prison and I lead creative writing workshops. And that allows people to kind of express those emotions that they're holding in for such a long time. You know, so unfortunately, but the word rehabilitation, I honestly don't know if it was something that they just chose to use to make prison sound like it's a place of healing. But honestly, you can go to jail and you, any problem that you had before jail is highlighted and just expanded in a way where you yourself kind of start to think, oh my God, like, am I actually crazy or something? Because maybe on the outside world, you had ways of somehow dealing with it. Maybe that for me, I had my mum, my sisters, like my friends, I can go to people's houses or people can come to my house. In prison, you can't do that. So you're on your own and you you learn how to kind of hide and disguise all of these emotions, whether it's through laughter or loudness, you learn how to do that. But rehabilitation itself within those prison walls doesn't actually exist.
It sounds like you did your own sort of rehabilitation by writing when you were in there.
Exactly. And that's literally, you know, meeting other women and seeing other women and hearing their stories, hearing how many women are in prison because of they love their wrong partner, you know, hearing, you know, women going through abuse way before they even got to prison. You know, these are all things that are like traumatic to somebody. But when you go to jail, none of this is even considered. So you are kind of thrown in a dark place with a lot of other people who are going through dark thoughts and the healing just doesn't happen. So for me, picking up that pen and just writing, and of course, I didn't think I was writing poetry. I honestly just wanted to stay out of trouble. Like, you know, I could feel the anger and I could feel the emotions and I can feel some of the pain that I honestly just, you know, I hated myself more than I hated prison. I just hated myself that I had put myself in this position to be here in pain, you know. So writing was a way to kind of get that out and kind of really start to love myself again and identify some of the things that I also needed support with. But I had to do that on my own through my writing and through prayer, even and picking up the Bible, you know, just so many things that you do as an individual to make sure that you're okay. And through doing that, you learn things and then you share with other women so that they can then do what you're doing or heal slowly with you.
Yeah, thank goodness you did. It sounds like you're gonna help other people. And one of the poems that you did write is called Road to Victory. Yes. Can you read us that one?
Yes, I can. So this is Road to Victory, and it's crazy because the title Road to Victory is like my prison sentence is now my victory, if that makes sense. So it's, you know, just something like that. So this is Road to Victory. I await sentencing, scared and confused, but there's no praying. If God loved me, then I wouldn't be in this mess. That's all I'm saying. You're female with no previous. You'll get off. You've got this, to stop fretting, I hear my friend saying. Yet my solicitor's voice rings loud. You're looking at 3 to 5. There's no doubt. So just make sure you pack a bag each time you take that stand. And still, I just can't quite understand. But the judge soon made it clear. He screams, 2.5, take her away. Take me where? I scream, but there's no sound. The water falls from my eyes, kiss my cheeks. Farewell to me trying to look hard. The life I once knew was no more. Shattered dreams of future plans all just taken in a flash. Dark shadows and angry voices in my head telling me this is the end. This is the end, so just end it. I left a piece of me on that stand. I felt her leave as I began to walk down them steps. I swear I never even looked back. See, I had to free her from this life that we was about to take because she was the me with the dreams and ambition. She was the me who still had faith in the so-called justice system. She was the me who prayed. She was that 11-year-old girl who sang in Sunday choir. She was the me who wrote songs for Sunday school. She was the me who still cared about life. All she was going to do was hold me back with her dreams of the life that we once had. Dreams were just a thing of the past. Because where I was going, dreams are for the weak. Forget love, I need respect. Because I ain't trying to be no one's chick. Media perception of life behind bars. My future, no more. And so I began my life behind bars. Broken and defeated with no feelings. Days are long, nights are longer. Weekend bang-ups all like a lifetime. pain and tears will only be felt at night. 11-year-old me, where are you? I need you, where are you? She returned to me in the form of a prayer. Not long now, girl, just stay strong. Pray to God and I promise you a better day. All of a sudden, it just made sense. This is a journey that was written for me to take, so I can teach my fellow brothers and sisters. It's not about anger, it's about peace. It's not about power, it's about grace. It's not about hatred, it's about love. These are the lessons I learned whilst in prison, so you don't have to go there to learn the same lesson. The choice is yours. I choose to be unchained.
Wow. Oh, I've gone ever so cold. I really have. That's incredible. And from the very beginning, my first thought was at the beginning that you must have questioned your religion. You must have questioned God. But I guess towards the end, you were thinking, I've been sent to do this, you know, out of something bad comes something good. And that was your fate, maybe.
Yes, that's exactly it. Because at about 13 years old, I did promise God that I would never go clubbing and go to church. And on the day that I ended up in trouble, I actually went to an evening service and then was arrested in the morning after the club. So it's only when I was in jail that I remembered that promise and remembered, oh God, like I actually promised you that I wouldn't do this. And that's exactly what happened, you know, because I was more angry at him for letting it happen. But then slowly it started to make sense. And it was like, you know what? There has to be a reason why I'm here. And seeing younger girls, like I was 21 by the time like I went to jail, but I was meeting girls that's like 18, 19, 16. And I just couldn't understand what they could have done to be here with me, if that makes sense. So yeah, faith really carried me a lot to be able to get through some of the things that I faced and witnessed while I was behind those bars.
Wow, well, well done you, because I know as well as the book, you're doing a lot of good work out there, going back into the prison, which must be a bit scary walking back through those gates.
It always feels a bit weird. I feel better going into a male jail than I do a women's jail, because I know I'm female. They might think coming in maybe in a male jail, like they can't leave me there.
Bless you. Well, there's much more, of course, in the book, which is called Behind Bars on Punishment, Prison and Release. It's out now by Lady Unchained, and of course we're selling it on our website. If people want to follow you or find out more, Lady Unchained, do you have any social media?
Yes, so I am on Instagram at Lady Unchained, and I am on Twitter at Unchained P.
Great stuff. Well, it's been a delight speaking to you. Keep up the good work, and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.